La thèse du livre, c'est que c'est le même Pascal, c'est une même personne humaine qui s'est exprimée sur trois registres tout à fait complémentaires. C'est pas du tout comme parfois on l'entend quelque chose de bizarre à la fin de sa vie. C'est pas du tout.
Ouais, ça.
En tout cas,
C'est
selon ce
intéressant.
livre.
De toute façon, c'est vrai que.
C'est la même énergie humaine qui est dans les trois recherches.
Ouais, je vois, je vois. Bah, c'est toujours fascinant quand on a affaire à quelqu'un qui a comme ça plusieurs casquettes et qui apparaît aux yeux des spécialistes dans une sorte de disjonction. Mais en fait, là, il y a une seule personne. Donc,
Oui.
enfin, forcément, cette personne, elle sait qu'elle est la unique et elle est capable de se distribuer dans plusieurs contextes.
Oui.
C'est fascinant. Enfin,
Ah, évidemment, pour nous, c'est notre parrain, parce que l'association qui réunit entrepreneurs, mathématiciens, philosophes, théologiens, c'est le parrain idéal. Enfin, on lui a pas demandé son avis, mais on le prend quand même comme parrain.
je pense qu'il aurait été d'accord, hein, parce que de voir qu'il est si bien représenté aujourd'hui, c'est quand même un honneur. Donc, en tout cas, c'est très intéressant. C'est très intéressant. Et l'inclusion de la théologie, moi, ça me plaît beaucoup aussi. C'est difficile. Souvent, on a du mal à, voilà, à avoir ce spectre-là, mais franchement, je trouve que c'est très, très intéressant.
Alors,
Bon,
shall I start again?
ouais, je propose. Tu vois bien, Étienne, l'écran à nouveau, oui?
Oui, peut-être
OK.
full screen, maybe. So, I was saying regarding Pascal, his first business was non-scalable, his mechanical machine for arithmetic. However, his second business was a sort of first Uber in the 17th century Paris. The carrosse à 5 sols, it was actually a transportation venture. Rationalizing on the basis of computation made by Pascal, a bit of optimization, which of those avenues in Paris would concentrate enough traffic to make a sort of a standard transportation bankable. And actually, it worked very well, and that business was very fruitful. And at the end of his life, he actually donated the profit of the company to some charities. So Pascal, of course, calls us upon acting under uncertainty. And this extract I've put forward is that if nothing should be done for the certain, nothing should be done at all because nothing is certain. And so we work when we work for tomorrow and for the uncertain, we act with reason. I mean, we are right actually to act for tomorrow under uncertainty. And then there is this sense about because we must work for the uncertain by the rule of thought is that is demonstrated. There are different ways to understand this sentence. One of it is to say that the let's say probabilistic reasoning is actually legitimate, and it's a rational way to act for the common good under uncertainty. And then if I go more into a mystical, Saint Paul calls upon us to actually act as a free being, not only for the sake of humanity, but actually for the sake of the creation itself, meaning that, and of course, with nowadays with the issue of the climate change and the future of the environment of this planet, you can listen to that call as the fact that we have to be co-creators. We have to follow the calling from God to actually act with reason and intelligence, facing uncertainty for the common good of the whole creation. And it's our responsibility to do so, meaning that we have to mobilize our entire intelligence for the common good. And inside our entire intelligence, of course, today there are those algorithms. And if I go to the next slide, I could say and I could argue in that perspective to say that choosing life today meaning choosing the path for the common good, requires as an obligation to mobilize all our intellectual resources, meaning in that sense that not using AI, which is among our modern tools, would be actually a sin. You could even see that in that perspective. Not mobilizing the resources of AI for the fights of today's life and today's requirement of the creation would be a sin. So there are all those big challenges we have to face, and it's our moral duty to mobilize all what you know, including algorithm. And of course, here I've represented a number of big challenges of the year 2021, starting from the upper right-hand side is facing these pandemics. How can we avoid that this new year, 2021, is as disastrous for the entire planet, including the poorest, because you know that the poorest people suffer the most in some respect from the pandemic. So how can we, and we have this moral duty not to underuse the potential of algorithm in order to trace, understand, predict what will happen with someone with the pandemics, and including there have been so many things with AI to combat actually the pandemics with the big challenges. Of course, data is so far is scarce because this disease is very recent. Now, not only this challenge, but there is also the big challenge of employment. Now, we know that actually, although many people would have argued that the big issue regarding employment is AI, now history shows that the big issue regarding jobs is not AI, is pandemics. And our moral duty is to actually envision a world today, not in the future, today, to give jobs for those people who've gone unemployed because of the pandemics. And there are many of other, in our association, we have some people who are doing some form of algorithmic coaching in order to help people find a new job, going into more than just your CV, but going into introspection through psychological algorithm to mobilize this kind of resources that you don't know, but that could be helpful in the new economy. And the sector of recruitment, HR, has already a lot of promises with algorithm. Now, I'm also involved in a venture on decarbonating the buildings, reducing the amount of CO2 and greenhouse gases, which are released by heating and air cooling in the sector of a building. And there's a lot to do there because it's contributing a lot to climate change and many other issues. We have also in the association a particular venture helping the poorest people, those people who are homeless, and with the use of a particular social network and an algorithmic-based application, helping those people to set up a form of a CV, because a big thing when you're homeless is that you have holes in your CVs, and then it's very difficult to get back to job because people actually don't understand who you are or get panicked. But through algorithm, you can actually obfuscate the fact that part of your life is void, and you can through anonymized recruitment give actually jobs to those people who've spent a few years in at street. And we have actually proofs with adventures that some people were able to go back to job. And of course, then there's the issue of people dying, of course, with car accidents. And of course, we all know that driverless cars is a very challenging issue for AI. If you look from the common good, one of the big promises to reduce the number of deaths, knowing that, and we have also in our association people involved into driverless car, one of the big issues here for AI is how do you drive cars automatic in the middle of cars which are actually driven by humans? And it would be much easier to actually have only automated cars than having also a mixture of AI powered cars and traditional cars. So we have a manifesto in our association, and the first principle for us is first to actually acknowledge the fact that algorithms are firstly, before being a risk, are firstly a benefit for the co-creator and responsible man who discerns the good uses of algorithms. Now, next slide. Now, the point of view that I will use here is the point of view of a deliberate human-centered point of view. I will not go into transhumanism and into the singularity. I would take the point of view, and you could say that it's wrong, or it's too risky to take that point of view, but that's my point of view, is that today's AI is actually a delegation of man to machine. Is it only a delegation of man to machine? And all what we have here, starting from the very simple decision support system, where actually machines prepare choices, but it's always a human who makes choices, including where you're on Amazon, you are clicking. It's not the machine who is clicking. You are clicking. Of course, you're clicking on things that are recommended by the machine, but at the end of the day, you are the decision maker. But down into the learning agent or the rational learning agent, whereby the man is still responsible, and the man is responsible through delegation, but man would have programmed those agents and would have set the condition for learning, for machine learning. So in that point of view, we don't have machine deciding by themselves. We have delegation of man to machine. And that's the point of view which is so far taken by the European regulations, meaning that if you go into law, you have no way for a sort of legal standing for a robot. Now, this is my point of view. Of course, there's another point of view saying that AI will get conscious, and I'll leave that to other people. Our focus is, and why this is our focus, is not only that it's the technological reality of today, but it's also because essentially the big risk on the common good do not require machines to be intelligent. You already have big risk and big promises for the common good with non-intelligence algorithm. And the fact that then algorithm would, some people would argue that in the future AI could get some form of consciousness, to some extent it's a second order problem in the fact that you can still endanger the human being and endanger the future of Earth, or the other way, you can actually produce a lot of good for the human being and a lot of good for the creation, following St. Paul and Deuteronomy, with non-intelligent machines. Now, the key thing on the revolution is not the fact that they're intelligent, it's the fact that they bring some considerable margins for economic efficiency. That's the big thing behind the revolution. It's not the fact that those algorithms are intelligent. Now, I have to say another thing, of course, if you go into a philosophical point of view, and I'm not a philosopher, but I will just introduce the fact that we have to make the difference between decision-making in the full sense, which is not, if you follow Aristotle, for example, and Thomas Aquinas and many others, decision-making is not just reason, it's also intention is not just knowing what to do, is also wanting to do something. And that level of intention, of course, is also, so far at least, is also a prerogative of man, and it is one thing which is very important to make the difference between decision making and decision support. Next slide. Now, so what I've said is that this bet, if I follow Pascal's logic, which is you have to bet, you have to work facing adversity, so you have to bet. So I've argued that this bet, using algorithm and using AI, is actually a moral duty. It's maybe a spiritual calling. Now, once we said that this bet is necessary, the question is it a fair bet? And what are the conditions under which we can consider the bet is fair enough, is adjusted, is just? And I will, of course, there are many questions to be asked here, and I will simplify with seven stages to help questioning based on our empirical experience as entrepreneur. Now, the first step is to be very clear about the benefits. Very clear about the benefits. What are the true benefits that we pursue with the automation of a particular function in a particular sector? What are those benefits? And actually, who decides on those benefits? With, of course, the risk that some people would decide for others. And I see that in the issue of carbon decarbonation and climate change, there is always the temptation to say, for the good of others, I will decide that this is what you need. And we are working with the agricultural sector. And there is this temptation to say, you will only get credit if you have, if you're okay with carbon. And you can actually parameterize algorithm for credit scoring. We, our venture is into agricultural credit scoring. So you can design your tool in order that the credit scoring is hidden, and you do not reveal that there is a fundamental requirement for carbon, for decarbonation, or you can make that explicit. And so here there's a first key point of view, is reveal the benefits. And actually, part decision-making. Do not keep the decision-making for those who decide the goods for you without consulting you. And there is, and of course, this has been developed a lot under the Catholic doctrine. And there's a piece which is the social doctrine of the church, which is a compendium with a lot of the moral teaching of different popes and Christian theologians regarding economy and society. And the common good defined under the social doctrine of the church is the set of social conditions that enable both groups and their members to achieve their perfection in a more total and easy way. And you see here that we are very far from saying that the common good is that we get rid of the climate change, whatever what people think. No, here we are centered into helping people by themselves at their level, at the level of each person, getting to their perfection, meaning more helping agricultural people to make their decision, knowing more about the consequence of their decision regarding the climate, but help them make their decision instead of saying just, we will take care of the climate and just follow what we do and just get the credit. So that's the first great thing to be clear with. If we go into trustworthy algorithm, is to actually reveal and part the benefits. Next slide. Once we have shared the benefits that are, and then next slide. Wow, it's surprising. It's not working. Okay. Previous one. Okay.
This one?
No, previous one. Okay. So second step in our discernment is once we've revealed those benefits that we're pursuing, do we have efficient, reliable algorithm? Are they performing with respect to that benefit? And so that's the issue of precision, reliability of algorithm. And of course, that's a big issue. And that's an issue for scientific discernment. And I'll go into the next line. Now, maybe I'll go a bit quicker now, because you all know, maybe you're all familiar. Next slide. You're all familiar with machine learning. So you all know, for instance, I've gone into binomial classification, right? Binomial classification is once I've said, okay, this algorithm is tailored to identify your risk of COVID, right? So the red people are those people who are high risk and they will get COVID and they will get a serious form of COVID. And those blue people are those who have no risk or less risk, okay? So what we want to do with binomial classification is actually discern the blue from the reds, right? And we want to discern those according to a number of features. Here I have scatter plots with two of these features, and I have just made taken four of those features. But you all know that there's a temptation today to go into a many number, very large number of features. Some people at Google saying we have a new algorithm, the 100,000 degrees of freedom is great, okay, and will help us discern very well the blue from the reds. Now, if I go to the next slide, I have a data scientist who tells me I have a 96% performance in discerning the COVID from the non-COVID. Okay, so what do you mean by that 96%? Is this really credible? And of course, you all know that you will have a different level of sophistication of the models here. Now, I've taken things from Turkish researchers, and those Turkish researchers have classified with the mean of machine learning, actually it's architectural structural elements in order for automating the recognition of agricultural architectural forms. But it's just for the sake of examples here, you have a graduation of different kind of models to actually discern the red from the blues. And you all know maybe that a very simplest one, the logistic regression, finding those there's a linear trend which is best differentiating the red from the blues down into the nearest neighbors. You are blue because all the people around you are blue, or the majority of people around you are blue. Into decision tree, you are blue because you have you're coughing and you have more than 38 degrees in temperature and you have less than Mara and more than that. You go into a decision tree to actually discern those red from the blues. So of course, very, very happy data scientists can go into deep learning and then say, I have a 98.5% performance of my algorithm. And of course, the big issue here, if you're really faithful to the common good, is how honest I am regarding many of the inaccuracy of this. Now, for instance, we all know that there's a big real data is noise data, and the position of those blue and red dots is not maybe as precise as we want. And now, if I suppose that the red dot is only as precise as, I don't know, a tenth of the length of the window. Now, is the nearest neighbor still reliable? Are we legitimate to actually draw such a precise frontier here? And now, what happens if I double the amount of data? Are we still having a robust frontier between the red and the blue? And of course, there's the issue of the generalization error. And very few data scientists are honest between the real performance under generalization error with respect to the very approximate performance of their validated sample. And of course, this is all the more important when you go into this frontier between the blue and the red. Now, in the blue and the red, where shall we put the frontier? And of course, there's a question of the false negative, false positive, and how respectively grave, how expectedly detrimental is it to classify under blue those people who are truly red and reverse, and which is the most serious. And here there's a parameter which is very important to actually parameterize the algorithm is the weight under which you will actually transform your loss function. And it's very important for the common good that the actual weights between the blue and the red have actually been debated. And this is not so much the case. Very few people reveal the actual weight between false negative and false positive. And that's also an ethical issue which should be shared with those users, particularly when you go into medical devices, going into death and life. To what extent the engine is actually a help for the debate between the doctor and the patient, including these uncertainties and this shared risk between false negative and false positive. Now, if I go for next slide. Of course, the general paradigm of decision support is look into the past on observables and decisional events, look into the X's and the Y's and learn on those data. And then when you go into a present state of world, you give a diagnosis and you say, okay, this is the decision I recommend. And maybe it's useful to understand that it's not so much different between AI, traditional science, and human expertise. All those reasoning have in common the fact that I actually assume that there is enough regularity between the past and the present, insofar as it is legitimate to draw from that past experience into today's decision making. And of course, so what I would say here is that predictability, which is the desirable property for algorithmic performance, is a very strong mixture of regularity and observability, meaning that I have to assume enough regularity in the system, and regularity, of course, I don't have time to go into mathematical details, but it's not only regularity in the sample, but it's also regularity in the space. When you're going into interpolation between observed states and the new states, if you're observing something which has never been observed in the past, the fact that you're actually interpolating between those blues, meaning that there is a legitimate level of interpolation, meaning that there is a regularity of the nature allowing you to do that, which is not so easily the case, particularly when you go into large dimensions. Spaces of large dimensions are the place for a large amount of irregularity. And of course, this is a strong limit into the performance of algorithm. And the second, of course, the second big assumption you have to do is that the space and the time is regular, and the space and the time are observable and are observable in a regular way, meaning that you are observing for your prediction the same thing as you've observed in the past. And meaning that if you have some degrees of freedom that were used in the learning, you need to have those degrees of freedom for prediction. And if you don't have them, then the model is no more performant. And in a practical application, it's a very common that we've learned an algorithm on a certain set of data. And in the real world, you don't have the money to actually get this kind of feature. And you're using the model without having the features or without having all the features on which you were observing. And then there's a big question of performance, and those 96% could be down to 20%. And of course, you could say that it's also the case for a human expert. And if a doctor has only seen 10,000 patients in his whole life, he has only seen 10,000 patients. Maybe he's seen more because he's learned from the university and through the learning of the man. He got experience from a larger, but he's limited to the data observed. So himself, the doctor, also has cognitive biases regarding regularity with respect to his experience and observability. So here we have a match, and the key ethical question is, to what extent AI, or I didn't speak about traditional science, which builds, of course, on observation, but also on a more analytical point of view, because you would also you would go into small pieces of phenological models, and then with equation like Boltzmann equation here, and you would assume a level of regularity in all the small equation, in so far that in total, the regularity is the sum of the small regularities. Now, here we have to be very, very honest with respect to all these kind of hypotheses, and how, to what extent a human expert tooled, supported by the decision-making algorithm, is better in those respects or less than a human expert without those data. And so biases are always respective to the different kind of reasoning, of course. So next slide. So of course, okay, so here I speak about regularity, observability. And I tend to say as a mathematician that a good model is firstly a model that is falsifiable, and where you well understand your failures. And usually when I work with a data scientist in a new venture, the first thing I ask him is, where does the model fail? And do you understand why it fails? Do not speak about the 96%. I'm not interested in 96%. I'm interested in the 4%. And if you don't understand well why it fails, put the model in garbage. It's not trustworthy. And of course, understanding failures is a great way into introspecting the generosity error. Next slide. Of course, there are limits to predictability. There are limits to performance. And this is what I will call uncertainty. And the uncertainty Pascal has called upon us. And so the level of uncertainty, of course, is different according to application. And in the best application for AI, I am predicting a single outcome. If I knew everything, there's just one good decision to make. And ideally, uncertainty is low. And you can take the example of fingerprints. You know, fingerprints has a long, well-documented history of 100 years of experiments. And to a large extent, we can assume that there's a unique projection of every human being into a precise enough space of fingerprints. So this is a kind of place where, if you have enough data, if the model is smart enough, you can be confident with the fact there is just one good decision to make, and it's credible to use it. And I've also been involved in a venture into automating accounting. And to a large extent, although it's got limitation because there's ambiguity sometimes in accounting, but to a large extent, you can say that one bank transaction, well understood, just has one good account. So there's one good decision to make, and you can fully automate if you have enough understanding of the bank transaction, if you have enough data, you can trust an algorithm which will give you the good decision. Now, of course, it's getting less credible when you go to weather forecast, even in short-term weather forecast. Now, Francis told me that it was supposed to be bad and it's good weather today in Istanbul. I don't know if it's changed already. But usually, in a few hours of time, now we're rather confident with weather forecast. And most people would follow their iPhone and wear the proper suit according to the weather forecast. Of course, if we go into mean time, mean range or long range weather forecast, we know that there's a lot of uncertainty. And that's also the case where you go into, for example, credit scoring, there's possibly, you can argue that there's one just good decision.